live from Liverpool, we need to talk about ghosts with Kevin Eustace.
So here we are. It is time indeed to talk about ghosts. It's time for the Sunday sermon. I am Kev Eustace. This is We Need to Talk About Ghosts, and that's because we do need to talk about ghosts. It's not just a clever title. It's what we do here. How are you all doing? I hope that you're all fantastically well. We've got a new president, of course, in the United States of America. I don't know how you feel about that, but I have the sneaking suspicion a lot of people are happy, and I'm happy too. Huzzah! And also, Bernie's doing the rounds, any memes of Bernie, because what happened is, and it's dead funny, is it got cold, so Bernie dressed up for winter and sat down. That's it. That's all that's happened. That's all that happened there. Bernie sat down and he's gone viral. Wow. I wish I knew his secret. Yes. Anyway, enough talking about politics. We have got a fantastic show for you today. We're going to talk to Mary from Boston. Yes, we are. Just the one call today, but it's a big one. And it's a cracking call. She's so, well, you'll hear, she's so descriptive in how she tells this story that I was literally, like, you can hear me on the call going, I can picture it so well. I don't turn into Mancunian. But yeah, it's such a good call, and it's really worth all your attention. I do say indeed. So there'll probably be no midpoint today because it's quite a lengthy call, and I want to try and do some of your written-in stories at the start of the show, as you'll hear. So there'll probably be no midpoint, but don't worry, it'll be back all German, all singing, all partying next week. Yes, it will. Okay, so it's that time of the week when we like to say thank you to our Patreons, especially our new Patreons. We love all of our Patreons equally because we're that kind of lovely people. I will say this, if you do like the show and you wish to help it continue, you can go over to patreon.com/we need to talk about ghosts and sign up. It'll really do us a favour, and not only will it do us a favour, you also get a song of your name sung out on an episode, just as you're about to hear. You also get access to over 100 Patreon-only episodes. And today's Patreon episode is going to be about the Battersea Poltergeist. Yes, it is. So get yourself over to patreon.com/we need to talk about ghosts, just like these wonderful people have done. And we need to say thank you to three wonderful new Patreons today. We have Melissa Baldwin, Dora Medeiros, and Louise Waggett. The guitar's out. There we go. Just proof that it's out. And this song, ladies, is for you. Melissa Baldwin, Dora Medeiros, and Louise Waggett. I wanna thank you to signing up to the Patreon. You all have it, and you are gonna get the extra episodes, baby. You might even win a signed book, oh yeah. Can you end it? On a seventh. If you're wondering what a seventh is, by the way, it's like a little, how would you describe a seventh chord? I don't know. It's kind of like an angel has touched a chord. Was you going to join in then, Becca, with some statements?
Yeah, sorry.
Well, how was you going to describe it, go on?
No, I was going to say, just play it. Why would you need to describe it?
I think because I was, well, sometimes words are better than hearing the tune, I think. But thank you to our three, just putting the guitar down. As you know, I struggle with this each and every week. I need a guitar stand. But thank you so much to you three wonderful people for signing up to Patreon. Don't forget, guys, if you want to go over and sign up, you're really helping the show out. And you get access to all of those extra episodes. Yes, you do. Okay, go to patreon.com/we need to talk about ghosts. I mean, of course, you don't need to know that www.ghosts at the start. As we've established, Kevin, people know how to use the internet, you idiot. Okay, and let's get to one of your listener-submitted stories, written in, of course, via email. Don't forget, you can send your stories in, or if you want to get in touch to come on the show and chat on Skype or Zoom or whatever, go to send the email to contact@talkaboutghosts.com, and we will chat. Yes, we will. That's how it works. Anyway, someone who has done this and has sent us an amazing story is Kim from Glasgow, as it's pronounced. Just to let you know, if you're waiting for your sent-in story to be read out, I'm currently getting really up to speed with it, so we're up to the start of December in terms of when people have sent the stories in, so only within the last 4 weeks. So send your stories in so that we don't run out. Yes, please. Anyway, this is Kim's story from Glasgow. It's called Spooky Tales from Glasgow. She says Glasgow, but you know, I'm doing an accent. She says, hello.
Hello.
First, let me just thank you both for being my first spooky podcast and getting me hooked. Ah, you're very welcome. I started listening just over a year ago, and now I can't stop. Seek help, Kim. A couple of tales for you. Not sure if they'll be any good or not. I'm sure they will, but I'm sure myself and the listeners will decide. This is your first tale. I grew up on a farm just outside Glasgow. I lived there for the first 18 and a half years of my life. Other than the two neighbouring farms, it was very isolated. The house itself was quite big, in brackets, I sound like a knob, but it's relevant, I promise. With three upstairs rooms, my sister's, my parents' office, and my bedroom. Our lounge was a room off to the right at the bottom of the stairs, and my parents' room slash kitchen slash bathroom were all along at the other side of the house. My sister had moved out and I was upstairs with the two cats for company. My parents would go to bed and once I put my TV off, it would be deadly silent and dark. Occasional creaks and groans from the house setting. It's approx 150 years old. And you can just write it off as that, the house settling down. However, I started to wake up with a bit of a start at around 2:30 to 3:30 a.m. and was convinced that there had been someone's face right in front of my own. Once I came to and popped the light on, there would be no one there. Door ajar in the same place, cats asleep and the deafening silence. This continued for about a week. Each night, it felt like this person slash thing was moving to the bottom of my bed. I used to have a sleigh-style bed and was convinced, as I am now, that someone was there. But every time that light went on, there was no one there. I should say, as well, that it scared me so much I ended up sitting up watching TV until it was time to get ready for school. The last night this happened, about 6 or 7 days after it started, I woke up suddenly, felt someone there, and then heard the bottom steps go. Now, these old stairs are super old, super noisy, and super distinctive. If you live in a house long enough, you learn where the noises come from and what they sound like. I swear that I heard three stairs, in brackets, wooden by the way, and no one at the bottom. A very distinct loud noise would come when you stepped into the bottom hall, but nothing happened. I shot up, lights on, and checked to see if it was the cats. They were sound asleep on my bed. If it had been my mum or dad, I'd have heard them walk through the dining room directly below me, but nothing. I shat myself, safe to say, and I've been terrified of the dark since. Wow. What a tale. That is petrifying, Kim. Oh my God, and I can't believe that you actually shit yourself. That's horrible. Did you clean up in time? I'm joking. I know what you mean. I wonder, surely that's a thing. That must be a thing across the world, the phrase shat myself, to mean scared. I hope it is, because I've just realised, like, we, Scousers and people in England probably, and definitely Scottish and Irish people will say, I shit myself. And it means I'm terrified, or I was terrified. But I've just realised if you don't use the same expression in, like, Australia or Canada or America or something, they'd probably be like, God, I tell you what, these UK people, as soon as they get scared, the bowels just go... But anyway, that's a bit crude, isn't it? A bit crude for a Sunday. I do apologise to everyone and to Jesus for it's his special day. Weirdo, Kev. Anyway, let's get on to your second story, Kim. My second little thing is just a bit of a side note for some opinions. I'm not sure entirely of what I believe in. I know I would like to believe in people watching over you, but I feel that means that I just believe in the bad stuff too. Not sure I'm ready to let all that in either. But anyways, I worked a job for 5 years that required me to meet people, chat to them, and really make connections with them. On three separate occasions, at three separate places over the 5 year period, people approached me. They all took my hands at various parts in the conversation and told me that I have a male figure who was always around to look after me. I, at that point, had never known any male who had died, so I asked both parents what they thought. I kid you not, both shared a spooky glance at each other and then said this. When you were five, we almost lost you. You were very close to being run over, and it was by some miracle that you weren't hit and moved out of the way. We've always thought you've been quite lucky, in brackets, again, grew up on a farm, got myself into some situations. And maybe you've been looked after. I love this sentiment, but I'm not so sure. Both my parents had lost their dads, so perhaps something to do with that, but I'd never met either of them. So it's a strange one. Anyway, I hope these give you the willies as much as they do me. Can't stress enough how much I'm enjoying the podcast. Aww, God bless you. All the best to you and Becca. Why, thank you. And thank you on behalf of Becca.
Thank you.
It sounds like I've got a kidnap going to do that, don't I? I know. I hope you both stay safe at this and happy at this time as much as you can be. Much love, Kim. Well, thank you, Kim. P.S. I should add I'm a critical care nurse and have stories from other nurses that I can maybe send over sometime if I get their permission. Oh my God, Kim. What you need to do is bribe them, give them Easter eggs, because they're in the shops now already, unbelievably. And yeah, if you can send them over, that'd be amazing. Kim, thank you so much for that email. What a tale. Okay, let's have some more spooky stories that you've sent in. So this next one comes from... Hold on, before I read this out, let me go to the bottom and see if I can use the name. It doesn't say I can't. Hooray! So this story comes in from Crystal Dobronetsky. And she says, Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
I'm really enjoying the show as a new listener. Keep up the great work.
Oh, bless you.
And I'm glad that you enjoy it. Thank you very much for saying so. I've had paranormal experiences on and off, mostly visitors just passing through. There are also lots of stories in my family about ghosts. My personal experience is not a full-on apparition sighting, but mostly corner-of-the-eye phenomena, feelings and sounds. Okay, what a great intro. Sounds like we've got a lot to cover off in this little story. So let's get to it. This is Crystal's story. Let me start by saying that I was never able to sleep well in the apartment I shared with my ex-boyfriend back in 2002. I always felt like someone was watching me. I was desperate, so I started putting a line of salt around my bed at night, and that seemed to help for a while. Anyway, I was living with my boyfriend in an apartment, and he would attend school on Wednesday evenings. One Wednesday, I was standing in the kitchen washing dishes when I heard the door open and someone come in. Assuming it was him, I didn't turn around and just said, Hey, how was class? No response. Okay, maybe he went into the bedroom or bathroom and didn't hear me. Before I could turn around, I could feel someone hugging me from behind, but no one was there. A few minutes later, he came through the door and saw the quite obvious look of confusion on my face. He was quite a hard skeptic, so I tried to explain it, but he basically said I was imagining things. 2 days later, on Friday, I was leaving for work but told him I was stopping at the witchy store to get some sage after work. He asked why, and I said, for the ghost. At that moment, a warm puff of wind hit my cheek like someone was breathing on it, and it freaked me out so much I just had to leave. Fast forward to not long after, when he and I were broken up. I was bringing my best friend to the apartment to collect some of my personal belongings, and she had never been there before. In brackets, she is able to see spirits, so she prefers to spend her time in her own home that's protected. That is why she'd never been there. I gave her a short tour, and then she waited, and I came out of the bedroom and we left. On the way back to her house, she tells me that she doesn't want to freak me out, but there were two spirits in the apartment. Spirit one is a grandmotherly type old lady, and she is the one who hugged me. She stays in the kitchen. Spirit two is a man who stayed in the bedroom and liked to stare at me and make me feel uncomfortable whilst I was trying to sleep. I have more. Just let me know. Wow. Crystal, I am letting you know right here, right now. Send more of your stories in, because that's petrifying. Amazing about the salt part as well. You know, you often hear people saying, I put a circle of salt around to protect me from the evil. There's a really good book called Will Store and the Supernatural, and I suggest everyone buys it. It's fantastic. But within that, I won't ruin the story, but there's a part of it where a woman's allegedly possessed, and there's a bit of doubt about it. Anyway, they lay some salt somewhere where she can't see it, obviously. And when he comes back a few days later, she's got wild eyes and she smells of bleach and she's frantically rubbing the spot where they put the salt, but she didn't know about it. It's terrifying. Go and get that book. It's amazing. Okay, I think we've got time for one more story before we get to the call this week. So let's do that. Okay, our next story comes in from long-time listener, lovely person all round, Misty Miller. Hello, Misty. Once again, long time no speak. And she sent in the following story. We're just going to get right into it, no preamble. Here we go. Growing up, my mum's mother, my grandma C, used to tell me and my three siblings that we had the sight. How could we not? It's just in our blood. Grandma C would explain that some people are just blessed with it, and that we should feel special, having been bestowed with this wonderful gift. I have often found it to be a curse. How can seeing or feeling things that no one else does be considered a blessing? Having to keep your dreams and encounters to yourself so no one questions your mental state. Only being able to open up with a few trusted people aside from your siblings. Looking back now, I think Grandma C should have told us instead that we were haunted. That things would be drawn to us. They may even follow us home. To be safe, to be guarded. To learn how to shut those doors and keep unwanted things out. As we've grown up, each of us have found our own ways to cope, to deal. My brother, Charles, turned to drugs and alcohol at first, found it made things worse and fell hard into religion. Selena, our middle sister, is also very religious and refuses to talk about all of the devil's unholy things. Finally, my youngest sister, Anna, claims it all part of a psychosis due to the environment in which we grew up. And me? I ignore it as much as possible. When that doesn't work, then I just deal with it as best I can, depending on the situation. We've all seen things separately, but it's the shared experiences that are the worst. The ones you can't explain away no matter how much you want to or even try to. The following is just one of those moments. The following is what happens when you and your home are both haunted. We moved a lot when I was younger. My parents were not the greatest or even most responsible people, and we were in and out of places. We did not live in this particular apartment long, maybe 2 years maximum. It will stick forever with me though. I will never forget the initial feeling the first time I stepped foot in it. The air was thick, it was hard to breathe. That familiar tingle at the base of my neck, spreading out across my shoulders and down my arms to settle in my hands. Something was here. It was very much occupied already, and we were not welcome, not wanted. I tried to tell my mum, but she brushed me off. The lease was signed, and we were moving in. It was just the feelings for me at first of randomly invading someone's personal space, of being watched, of discontent. As we began to settle in, it would escalate to a shadowy figure just at the corner of my eye. Just out of focus and never seen face on. Meanwhile, my brother and younger sister, who were too young for school at this point, were already interacting with things. They had made friends with the twins, Eric and Erica. They were mischievous and loved to play. I had seen this boy once and only the one time. As I walked past my sister's room to go to the bathroom, a ball came rolling out into the hall. Looking into the room, there was a little boy, maybe 5 or 6 years old, with black hair and green eyes, sat there on the playmat. He looked so expectant as if he wanted me to roll the ball back. I shook my head and continued on my way to the bathroom. There was a different energy after that. Toys would show up in random places or randomly make noises. The piano bench my dad had found in a thrift shop would roll around during the night. The kitchen table chairs would be turned to face the wall, as if a child was sat there in a time out. Lights would flicker on and off, phantom laughter would sound, my hair would be tugged playfully when I was alone trying to do my homework. The feeling for me was basically that something was wanting our full attention and making sure that it had it. Even our parents were having problems ignoring it. My mother would sage the apartment, it would calm down for a bit, but eventually reach a breaking point once more. It was during one of these cycles, one of these breaking points, that the experience that haunts me to this day occurred. It is something that I could never forget, even if I tried, which I have. I shared a room with my brother, Charles. He had this toy phone, You know the one, rotary top, solid white with that eerie red smile painted on it and the blue eyes that blink when you would pull it along on its little short cord. Every night, without fail, he would use it to call our family members and wish them a good night. We were both laying in our beds, only our nightlight providing any illumination, when I hear him turn and release the rotary. The accompanying ring. "Good night, Auntie Sharon. I love you." He hangs up. I hear the rotary go again. "Good night, Grandma in Florida. I love you." Again he hangs up. A moment of silence, and then I hear, "Good night, Charles. I love you too." I shot up from bed, looking around. There's a creaking sound coming from our closet area. This sudden dread fills me, and this urge, this need to be anywhere from that room, washes over me. I am up and moving. I grab my brother and rush the short distance across the hall to wake our sisters. I tell them we will be spending the night in the living room. I get all three of them settled on couches with throw blankets, make sure to turn on the lamps, put on some Disney movie, and then head to the kitchen to grab some fruit snacks and juice boxes. I avoid looking down the hall at all costs. I can feel it though. It's there. My whole body is chilled. The best I can describe it is as a tingling sensation from head to toe. I know it's there. I can feel it watching me, waiting. The shadow seems darker and deeper than possible. I want to throw up from fear, but I don't. I had failed at hiding my initial fear, but I would not give in and feed it anymore. I make sure to leave the dining room light on. It's a safe midpoint between the living room and the kitchen, and I can dart back into the living room and not worry about touching those horrid shadows. Hours later, I wake up. My siblings are still asleep. The movie is over. Our little haven is bathed in the soft lamplight. I get up to turn off the television and VCR. As I do, I notice movement in the hallway shadows. I tell myself not to look, but I can't help myself. There, in the opening, just in the light from the dining area, is an old lady. She's dressed in a long flannel nightgown. Her hair is white and wild. Her skin is blackened and burnt. Her eyes just sunken pits. She raises a charred hand and points at me before fading away slowly. It feels like a warning of sorts. Not wanting to risk it, I never slept in my room again the rest of the time we lived there. My father had a friend of his, a medium of sorts, come to clear the apartment. It didn't work, even though the guy claimed it did. The children may have crossed over, but the old lady remained. I would hear her in my closet whenever I, reluctantly, had to go into my room. She would look out of my bedroom window, watching us get on and off the school bus. I would glimpse her at the end of the hallway, crouched and waiting. I even heard her whisper, "Good riddance," the day we moved out. Misty Miller. Oh my effing Jesus. Shat yourself? Talk about shat yourself. I'm shatting myself now. In the metaphorical sense, of course. Oh my Lord, that is petrifying. You know what is this? I mean, it's all horrible and it's all terrifying. That description of the burnt lady. Oh my Lord. That's put the fear of God into me. And you know what is even worse than the description of the burnt lady? That very last line. I would glimpse her at the end of the hall, crouched and waiting. That's the sort of word, crouched, which for me gives absolute credence to that story. Because if you're going to make up a ghost story, it would not, in my mind, anyway, tell me if you think I'm wrong, but in my mind, it would not enter your brain to use the word crouched to describe a ghost. It just wouldn't. So, Misty, that is unbelievable. I want you to send in more stories, and if they're like that, I want you to put a warning at the top saying, "Hi, Kevin, please wear 3 pairs of underpants," because that is just fantastic. Oh, my sweet Lord, be still my racing heart. It could be cholesterol, but it's more than likely the crouch burnt lady. Wow, thank you so much, Misty. Anywho, we're now going to go to the call with the wonderful Mary. I hope you all enjoy it. She's in Boston. It's in America. Let's have a hot dog. I still can't do the accent. I'm not going to try anymore. It's quite offensive. Apologies to everyone. Anyway, Misty has some amazing stories. Listen to a description of the house. It's just fantastic. And we're going to go over to Misty and her story right about... Oh, hold on, is Becca?
Hello.
Come say hello to the guys, because you haven't said hello for ages and you missed.
No, I'm not. Hello. Hi, guys.
Hi.
You were about to mock my voice.
I would never mock your voice.
You were about to. I heard the hi of your start and then you rethought it.
Well, it's because you're above me and I'm sat down, so you could easily just flick me ear or punch me in the face.
Couldn't flick your ear. You've got headphones.
Oh, yeah, I'm wearing cans, aren't I? I'm wearing headphones, so you couldn't flick my ear.
Punch you in the face, though.
You could punch me in the face, yeah, quite easily. What are you doing?
Right now, I need to make my truffles.
This is hysterical, by the way. Come down a bit closer to this, because just repeat that, just in case people didn't hear it.
I need to make my truffles.
You're making truffles. So yesterday, because we're in lockdown and we've got nothing to do, as we're walking through town, through the city centre, Becca says, I need to get, what did you need to get?
A mini Glenmorangie.
Which is a scotch, a mini bottle of scotch. And I went, all right, why do you need that? Now, bear in mind, we've never celebrated this day ever before, right? So tell everyone, Becca, why you needed that little bottle of scotch.
Is it because I'm going to make Scottish whiskey truffles for Burns Night?
Yes, because Becca...
Becca's like, what? Since when do we celebrate Burns Night?
Why, exactly,
do,
yeah.
Do I need to get you a card?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, is this part of our Scottish heritage? But you are, it turns out you are Scottish heritage, aren't
I
you?
I do have Scottish heritage, yeah. I have two Scottish grandparents.
So you're technically like a quarter or something?
Yeah. So, well... Is it technically half? I don't even know.
I don't know. Well, you're related to Jerry Rafferty, aren't you?
Yes.
Singer of Baker Street.
Yes. So when Scotland claims independence and rejoins the EU, hopefully I'll go with them.
Fair enough. Would I get any benefits then? I mean, I could claim Irish nationality. So should we just both do that and we'll just be Celts?
Yes.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, I hope you enjoy making your truffles.
Thanks, yeah. So I've made the mixture and everything, put them on the fridge to set, and now I will be shaping and making the actual individual truffles.
I'm just going to put you on the spot now, which will be quite embarrassing, I think, for you, unless you answer it.
Oh, no.
When is Burns Night?
Monday.
Ah, shit on. All right, then, fair enough. I thought you were going to go, I don't know.
Tomorrow.
Is it tomorrow?
Yeah. That's why I'm making them now.
And we don't have to do anything else other than eat these truffles. We don't have to, like, you know, do it. A Kaylee or anything.
Well, there's the ceremonial fire on the balcony, obviously, that we have to skip around.
You're taking the mic now. Hopefully, anyway, because it's a wooden balcony. We'll set the place ablaze. Okay, then, Becca, well, thank you for joining. We're going to have to get you on to do a proper show soon because you haven't done one in ages.
Okay.
You're slacking.
Am I?
Yeah. You wrote that book and then got off.
Yeah, done my bit for a few months.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of the book, by the way, for all our Patreons, there will be a new, I was going to say quiz then. I don't mean quiz. There'll be a new competition announced on today's Patreon where you can win a signed book, but that's for Patreons only.
Okay.
Yes. Are you up for signing a few books?
Yeah, sure.
Amazing. Okay, then, Becca, I'll let you get back to your truffles.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Okay, then. And after that rude interruption by Becca,
hey.
We are now going to listen to the conversation I had with the wonderful Mary about everything she experienced in Boston. And believe me, it's amazing. Such good descriptions she gives. So pay attention to it because it's worthwhile. Okay, then, you wonderful ones. Here's Mary's call. So it's that time of the week, everyone, where I get to speak to somebody wonderful who listens to the show. And I'm very fortunate even enough to do so. And today we're going to speak to the wonderful Mary, who's over in the States in the Boston area. Hello, Mary.
Hello.
It's fantastic to speak to you. How are you? I mean, I won't ask you political views, but you have a new president, I see.
We do.
And I've just said I won't ask you your views, but are you happy?
Very, very. Yesterday was a great day.
Yeah, it seemed like a wonderful day, I must admit.
It really was.
Very nice. And, you know, anyway, I don't want to, like, put off anyone. In fact, you know what? It's kind of, no, I won't even say it because I could get into a lot of trouble. But, yeah, needless to say, I'm happy with the decision made. So, well done and congratulations on your new person in charge.
Thank you.
But anyway, this is not, we need to talk about idiot presidents leaving and great ones, hopefully, stepping into office. This is, we need to talk about ghosts. So, yeah, you got in touch because we're now doing, obviously, these type of calls. And you said that you may have some previous experiences that would be of interest to me and all of our listeners.
Yes. I lived in a house in the Boston area, and it was a caretaker situation. And everyone who saw the house or came to the house the first question everybody asked was, is it haunted? And so then living there was a very strange and funny experience. And some of the stories in my original email to you, I said, Becca will like some of this because some of it is just, we were wound up and looking for things, you know, to get freaked out about. And yeah. Some of it was just, you know, not explainable. And the thing though, I feel that there is something there, but I don't know what it is. And it isn't typical of like a haunted house situation because I just can't, like, I always check in on that house, even though I haven't lived there in a long time. I always like check the website and see what's going on there. Like, it just kind of never leaves me that I lived there. And that everyone thought it was haunted, but I didn't. And I've always been sort of a sensitive, like, as they say, like a sensitive person. So
a psychically sensitive person sort of thing.
Yeah, especially in a place. Like if I go in, and Massachusetts has a lot of old buildings, and sometimes I go into old buildings and I'm like, you know, I want to leave.
There's a vibe sort of thing.
Or I won't want to go in at all.
Yeah.
And the first time I was made aware of this, I was invited as a kid to a house on Nantucket is this like super old whaling island where like rich people hang out now. Wow. And when I was a kid, a neighbor's had a rich grandfather and they invited my sister and I to go and I didn't sleep the whole week. We're like, you know, it's at the beach. It's beautiful. It was wonderful. In this like mansion, it was like a fairy tale. And like, we didn't grow up with like, you know, I had like Irish immigrant parents and like, we didn't grow up with tons of money, but it was a big treat, but I couldn't enjoy it because I just couldn't sleep there. And I was about 9 or 10. And when I was older, the dad told us that the house was like known to be haunted. Yeah. The guy that wrote Jaws, you know, the movie Jaws?
Yeah.
With the shark. The guy that wrote that book used to rent that house in the winter to write in the winter. And he did all these interviews about all the ghost stories, like being in that this house alone.
Amazing. And I was
in the same house.
Wow.
And he had stayed in the room across, and it was like, you know, rich people stuff, like in England, where it's like the red room, the yellow room, the blue room, you know. The room he stayed in, he named it by the color in the interview, and it was across the hall from the room I stayed in. And he claimed to have seen like full body apparitions. And then there was a ghost story book that was published later about houses in Nantucket. And sure enough, that house was in it. So I thought, geez,
Wow. And was sorry to interrupt, but was it like a really old house? Like, do you know what it was? Like, what was the history of the house sort of
the
thing?
The history of the house was, if you're in Nantucket town, it's like an old... you know, New England compared to where you live is like what's old, but it's like as old as it gets, basically. And it was in that town center. There's like a main street and, you know, a few streets off of that that have the oldest houses. And it was one of the mansions in that very old part of town. A guy lived in it that I guess robbed. I mean, I don't know how you rob the only bank on an island and get away with it, but that's the story.
Wow.
And when we were kids, they said, you know, he hid the money in the house. And so we'd be like knocking on the walls and looking for hiding place. It was amazing. Huge. It was huge. But I remember not sleeping there.
Yeah.
Ever. Like it just felt like someone was always looking at me. So for me to be in this house, this other house that I don't know if you clicked on the picture, but like it's a big old creepy house. And it didn't bother me at all in most of the house. Some parts of the house bothered me. So I really like old houses and, you know, stuff like that. Like I like I'm a history teacher. So I went when I was living there very young and in that area, and I had got wind that they were restoring this old house. And I used to like to volunteer for things like that. I was involved in like a couple of different very old houses falling down that towns or groups were trying to restore. And I liked to get involved because
That sounds amazing. Like,
you know, I mean, there's not a lot to do because it's not like I can, you know, do plaster work.
Do more or less just go in and go, you just go in and go, this is a lovely building. I'll just polish this table for 4 days.
So this property was owned, and I won't say the town, but because I don't know if they would identify, they'd probably know who I am. Yeah. The town had inherited the house. The house had been a summer home for a very rich Boston family. And then in the probably in the Great Depression, they were like, yeah, get rid of this stuff. Yeah. So they donated it to the town, which at the time probably seemed generous, but then the town has to deal with it. So then the town used it first for veterans housing, which is, there's a funny story with that. And then they used it for, and I think old age home. There was definitely a time period where they had, it was almost, we call it in America, a halfway house, like people who can't live alone, but can sort of live independently. And
yeah, what do we call it here? Like sheltered accommodation, sort of independent living, it's called, I think, but it's
exactly. So then all of that fizzled out, and they were going to try to sell this piece of property, which is like 50 acres of land, and it's beautiful. So you're in this very close to Boston, like 10 minutes to Boston, but you feel like you're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And so there were some environmentalist people in town who were actually, and they still run the situation there, mostly bird watchers. And so, and so now, like, I was living with a boyfriend at the time in the house. We were the caretakers together, and we're still friends. And like, that's the joke, is like, these bird watchers wanted to preserve the land, but they didn't really know what to do with the house. Like, that was so we were, now I think they're doing a pretty good job with it, but at the time it was like, kind of crazy. They were much more interested in the land than they were in the house. And then thankfully they found this architect who lived in the neighborhood and grew up in the town and wanted to really, really legitimately wanted to help. And he was great. But then there was, you know, the problem of obviously with money and finding the money. So one of the things, the reason they had caretakers was because it was a notorious location for high school and college kids in the area to break into the house and have parties.
Right. Okay.
So they were trying to get that under control, and that's where we came in. They were like, well, we're going to fully alarm the house.
Yeah.
And we need somebody to live there. So there's like a car parked in the driveway, and people know that somebody's in there, and you can't mess around with it. And I was like 25 and broke, and this sounded like a great idea.
Yeah,
right?
Sounds amazing.
So we were like, we can do that. Live for free. Yes. So in addition to the fact that I had walked around and I felt like, you know, I'm okay in here. You know, there are many places, again, like I would walk right out of or refuse to walk into. I have dream visitation stuff. I you know, I have a lot of my husband's a career paramedic. Wow. And he was teasing me about stuff one time, and he worked in a very sort of blighted urban city outside of Boston for many, many years. And he drove me around it once and was like, which house on this street did something really bad happen in? And I was able to tell him every time.
Wow, that's impressive.
Able to point to it. And he'd be like, well, what happened? And then I'd get like a sensation. Like one time I knew that it was the second floor and that there were multiple people, and I kept doing this. I'm like, I can't breathe. I'm right here. Yeah. And he was like, seven people suffocated in a fire there.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Well, it's not amazing, but you know, it's amazing that you picked that up.
So then it was a game, and we went around for like a whole afternoon. We hardly knew each other, and he was just like, holy crap. But I didn't know I could do that either. And then other
people. Was this before you got together?
Yeah, well, now we're married.
I was going to say, like, who? If I was sat next to someone and they were walk every time we drove somewhere, they were like, and then five people probably died, and I'd be like,
no, fact, no. He would ask me because he would already know. He would have done the call where he would have like either saved somebody's life right. or declared somebody dead, and so he was. The first time it happened, we were going to a park. Yeah. And he and I grew up kind of near each other, but didn't meet until much later in life. And he said, do you remember, there was a big plane crash here and a plane like, landed in one of these houses. And I said, no, I don't remember that, but that's the house. And I pointed to it and he was like, and he's like, how do you know? I'm like, I don't know. I think that's the house. I said, did two people die? Like a girl died and somebody in the house, and I just went through the whole thing, and the whole thing had happened before I was born.
Wow.
Because we Googled that. So then he was like, ooh, that's spooky, you know, and we, so anyway, I have something.
Sorry, I'm just laughing because I just love the idea of this fella going like, I like this woman. I think I'm going to stay and marry her. She's great. She can see the dead.
Marry this woman.
Yeah.
You know, well, it's just, he was like, he's seen so many people die and seen so many strange things connected with that he kind of has, as a scientific person, he's still kind of, I don't know, he's got a spooky side to him too. But
yeah, I suppose when you deal with death so often, it must become a very different thing than to the average layman. Do you know what I mean?
I think so. Yeah, I would say that about him. So he was kind of like, huh. So we did so then people have told me since, like, well, you could develop this. And I'm like, nope,
yeah.
I don't need to know more. I don't need to know more. I'm scared that I can do that. But anyhow, I moved into this house and they had given us, if you look at like the front of the house, a big brick mansion.
Mm.
And the quarters, so to speak, that we had were about a third of the house, but on the right side if you're looking at it.
Yeah.
And the kitchen was the original kitchen, although they'd updated it. And we had sort of a sitting room, and this matters, like sitting area. It was like a big open space. So I put like a couch and a TV down there, and there was like an island in the kitchen, whatever. Upstairs, we had a really nice big bedroom that I felt very safe in. It was always really warm and like very sunshiny, and nothing about being in there bothered me.
Yeah.
But there were other parts of the house that I did not like, but I just didn't go in them because it was huge. Like, you don't have to go everywhere.
Did you have full access to the whole house, although you just lived in one area?
We had full access to the whole house.
Wow.
So for example, the dining room was in pretty good shape. The formal dining room, and it was all wood paneled and,
oh, amazing.
Gorgeous. And so on Christmas, we had tables, like we found, like we set up enough tables, we served dinner for like 16 people, like, wow. Both of our family, it was so much fun. We had a massive Halloween party with, because we were like 25, so all of our
fantastic
friends came out from Boston, and I made a comment in the invitation, I'm like, if you're not full on in costume, don't come. Like, I was being really cheeky, but people really did, it was because we had to steer people through. This is the other thing. The family had given the house and a big piece of land to the town and another piece of land to the town to make a cemetery. So we had a driveway, but it was gated because they didn't want people to be able to drive up to the house. So if we had a guest, there was an access road that you could find in the back of the cemetery.
Amazing.
So it was actually easy. I'd often just go through the cemetery anyway, instead of like when it's cold out and rainy, instead of like getting out, unlocking the gate, driving through, locking the gate back up, and then going in.
So where was the cemetery in the proximity of the house?
You couldn't see it because it was very wooded around it, but very close. Like,
this sounds amazing.
It does. Yeah, it was really crazy. Does. And people would be like, how do you live here? But when I was in the house, I just really kind of felt like this is peaceful, and I'm a super introvert. So it was like, no one's around. I like this.
Yeah,
like,
it's very
solitude and beautiful land. And, but yet like 10 minutes drive into the city, super close. So, when we had the Halloween party, we made the, and this is before, you know, not everyone had a smartphone. I don't even know if smartphones existed. It'd be like 2003 or something, a long time ago. So we actually made an invitation, and I wrote out step-by-step instructions of how to enter the cemetery. And it was like, take a right at the Jones stone. Like, it was hilarious. Yeah. And the guy that I was living with dressed up in this like clown costume, like It from the book. And he was jumping out of the woods at the cars. And I mean, we just had so much fun with it.
Amazing.
But there were a bunch of weird things that happened that really, when you live in some place like that, you can't just absorb and be like, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
And so the first one, and I texted him the other day. I thought I was going to talk to you Sunday, and then, oh gosh, I felt awful. But I texted him. I'm like, here's the list of weird things. Do you remember anything? Am I missing any? Because I feel like there should be more weird things from there. Yeah. And he's like, nope, that was it. And so the first thing that happened, we moved in like September, and we were asked to kind of keep the lawn around the house neat. So I had just started teaching for the first time. And so on Saturday mornings, I would sleep late. Like, that was my rule. Like, don't, nobody wake me up. I'm sleeping.
Yeah.
So I was up sleeping, and he was an early riser. So he was out raking leaves and doing things in the yard, and a cop walks up to him in the middle of the, I mean, we're in the middle of the woods. Yeah. And he says, hey, you know, do you live here? And he's like, oh yeah. And we hadn't like really interacted with the police or the fire people, but don't worry, because we do a lot after that. Right. Like, we had no interaction with them before that. And he's like, oh yeah, you know, my name's Sean, and we live here, blah blah blah. And he said, well, who lives here? And he said, oh, Mary lives here with me, and it's just the two of us. He said, where is she? And he said, upstairs asleep. And he said, I need you to get her. And so then he's like, what did she do? You know?
Yeah. And take a weapon.
And he's like, why? You know, what is this about? And he's like, I need her to come down here. And so he comes up and he's like, there's a cop downstairs that wants to talk to you. And I was, you know, groggy. It was like 9 o'clock in the morning. But, you know, we'd probably been on like a little bender the night before or whatever. And I was kind of like, so I threw some clothes on. I go downstairs and I said, what's this about? And he said, oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure you know, we're here. And so then he proceeds to tell us that somebody who goes jogging in the, you know, the hiking trails behind the house had found a bone in the woods, and they didn't yet know what it was.
Oh my God.
And so I was like, oh, you thought he like killed me or something?
No, yeah. I'm gonna just be calm.
And they were like, you never know. So, you know, it wouldn't have been out of the question. They're like, well, you know, there's like mafia stuff that goes on in town here, and or out of Boston. It's a big piece of land, whatever.
Yeah.
So they like send it to the state crime lab, and like, you know, small town cops make this big deal out of it. And it turns out it was a deer femur that like probably a coyote ate, but they scared the daylights out of us.
Yeah, I bet you did. I thought you were going to say you went down and there was no copper there at all, but that's kind of scary. If they're like, oh, well, we have the mob.
They were like, where is she? Right? Like, they wanted to see evidence that I existed. They thought, I'm like, they thought you murdered me and like threw the bones in the back here. But that's kind of like the house would bring that out in other people.
Yeah.
So then this is the thing that when I was listening to last week's episode that I was up, I fell asleep, like right after I texted you, I just like fell asleep, and I woke up at 2 or 3 in the morning and then couldn't sleep. So I'm listening to the long episode, thrilled to have something to listen to. And that woman started talking about like ghost 911 calls. And I just like, oh, like, because that was the weirdest thing that happened there, was when I was there by myself, the local emergency response people would get 911 calls from the house, and no one would be on the phone. But they had our number, And the alarm company had our number. So anytime anything happened, they'd call us.
Yeah.
So if we weren't home and the alarm system went off, they would call us and be like, it's going off. This is the zone that got infiltrated, like whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so we'd either go deal with it or we'd call the police and have them come help us deal with it. Or if we were in the house, we'd do, you know, what depended on what was going on. But
yeah.
They would always call us. So it never happened when I wasn't home. It never happened when my partner was home alone. It was only when I was home alone. And the first time it happened was after the bone thing. So we were already kind of on edge.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm home alone and it's nighttime. And I had made dinner and it was spooky to be there by yourself. But I knew that the entire, so the third of the house that we lived in was alarmed, but not motion sensored. So right. If anyone pulled a window or a door in where we lived,
it would go off.
It was loud. You could hear it for miles. It was so, it was terrifying because I did have teenagers try to get in the house once when I wasn't home and I drove up and they were all running. And so I stopped my car and I was like, listen, this is why you shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And they're laughing. I'm like, just get out of here. The police are coming. Like, go hide in the woods. I said, just don't, you know, like, don't bother. Can't get into the house anymore. So in the other part of the house, though, the motion sensors, like if anything, if any movement happened, but then they could tell you where in the house the movement was. So I felt safe because of that. So I was in the house and everything was alarmed up and I'm watching TV and I'd made my dinner. I'm like on the couch, you know, whatever. And the front of the house was level with the driveway. The back of the house, though, like the basement, you go down a step, it was like built into a hill.
Yeah.
And so the basement, you could walk out the back. But the front of the house, the windows were right there. And I'm sitting there and all of a sudden there is a man in the window of the kitchen with a flashlight beaming in at me and banging on the window.
Oh my God. And you're home alone.
And I'm alone. And I screamed. And he's, and then he puts his badge in the window, like, oh, thanks. Like, could you have maybe done
that first? Yeah.
But I had you know, heart failure. And so and he says, are you all right? Like, why I don't know why he didn't ring the bell. I said, I was like, you know, he's looking at me and I'm like, yes. And he says, can you let me in? And I said, sure. So I undo the alarm, open the door. And he said, there's a 911 call coming out of here. And we have to respond.
Yeah.
And I said, well, he said, are you alone? And I said, well, I think so. And he laughed. And I was like, I mean, I don't know. So I said, none of the rest of the house has like gone, the alarms haven't gone off. So he said, would you like me to search the house? And I said, yes. So
can I just ask, sorry to jump in. Can I just ask, when he says there's a 911 call coming, he means separately from when the alarm would trigger and that would automatically phone the police.
This was
a physical call being put in.
The telephone was calling 911, but there was nobody on the other end.
Oh my. And I've just got a genuine shiver because I can picture this place so well. Oh.
And
sorry,
so
carry on. Sorry.
They were, and their rule in America is that you have to respond to that because somebody could have called, and if you were being controlled by another person, they could have hung it up.
Yeah, of course.
So they always come. So he said, would you like me to search the house? And I said, yes. I was like, have fun. He was like, oh.
See you in 3 hours.
Right. So goes through the basement, goes through the whole house. No one's here, can't find anybody. And so he's like, well, that's weird. I said, can they tell what phone it came from? Because there were like three phone jacks in the house. And he was like, I don't know. You should call the, maybe call the phone company. And he's like, but at least nobody's here. Do you want me to stay out? Like, because he knew I was there by myself. And he was kind of like, do you want me to like hang out outside until someone else comes? I said, no, it's fine. I'm just going to alarm it all up and I'll be fine. Somebody was coming soon anyway. So But then that kept happening. Wow. And so, you know, we're talking to, because the town owned the property. So we're talking to them. And they said, well, we just put in this new phone. Like, the house didn't even have like a decent phone line. We just put it in. It's new. Yeah. But somebody had lived there before me for over a year. And that, it never happened to them.
In the same role, like as a caretaker role?
Mm-hmm.
Right, okay.
So it never happened to them, and they installed the info. The phone line was put in when they came, and also there were plenty of times where I was gone or out of town, and I wasn't the only one home, and never happened when I wasn't home. It was only when I was home.
Wow, that's petrifying, because that's kind of like you're the focal point of it, really, without trying to make it sound scarier than it might have been. But that, just from what you're saying, that's the case, isn't it? You were the focal point, it appears.
Did not like that. So no. We called the phone company, and they were like, very puzzling. You know, sometimes that happens with an old phone line, but it's a new one. And so they came in and ripped everything out and redid it, and it stopped. Okay. So then around Thanksgiving, November, December-ish, Thanksgiving, Christmas, my sister comes to visit from out of state. And she stayed with us. And she's also a little spooky like me. Like, she picks up on things or has weird dreams or, you know, nothing like, none of us are like a medium service so we can talk to your dead relatives or anything. But so she came and she wanted to stay with us and not my parents, because it would be kind of like more fun. We're closer to the city.
Yeah.
Whatever. So she came and stayed with us, and she's like, oh, this place, oof, I don't like it here. And I was like, you know, it doesn't really bother me. And she's like, no, poof, I don't like it here. And I, you know, was like, well, you know, you'll be fine. It's fine. So she had stayed and slept on the couch, and she was walking to the bathroom in the middle. This is always when it happens, right? Like, walking to the bathroom in the middle of the night. And she swears on her life, she heard, like, over her shoulder into her ear, somebody whisper her name. And it was right outside my bedroom door. And so she turned around expecting to see me. Like, I was like, Allison, you know, like, but there was nobody there. She would never come back. She would never. God. And she was like, how do you live there?
You know what's interesting is that, like, that's, and it's only, you know what, seriously, because it's obvious because I do this podcast that I, like yourself, like a lot of people who listen, have been into the paranormal probably for quite a while, always had an interest in it. And therefore you pick up on little sorts of, like, you know, you've got your white ladies, you've got your Bloody Marys, you've got your Banshees, you've got all these sorts of tropes, types of ghost. The one that has popped up and more often than not in doing these calls is the ghost that says the person's name.
Yeah.
And it's such a weird thing. It happens a lot more than I've ever assumed possible than before I started doing this podcast. It's only really came to light that a lot of people report getting their own name said to them. And it's a really interesting thing that I've only just, with you saying that, I thought, I'm going to have to mention this now, because that's about maybe the fifth or sixth time somebody's mentioned this phenomenon.
It happened to me in college. I went to college in a on like a Civil War era college campus.
Yeah.
And my roommate and I were both named Mary. And we used to get woken up. Like, we would hear somebody go, Mary, in the, like, oh, in the middle of the night. And so now one of my, like, really good friends works at the university, and they've closed that room that I lived in it storage. And I was like, oh, it's because it's haunted.
That's fantastic.
But I mean, I've experienced what my sister was describing. I've experienced that.
Wow.
But I never did in that house. I don't know if it was like leaving me alone in that, but that wanted to bother her. I don't know why. And she was just like, well, I'm never staying here again. This place is creepy.
Yeah.
So that was weird. But I, again, it wasn't my experience. So, you know, we kind of kept on, and I feel like I'm leaving something out. Well, the two places in the house that bothered me that I did not like were the basement and the third floor.
Right.
So the basement was where the laundry was, and I would literally throw bags of laundry into my car and do it at my mother's house a half hour away versus go up and down those. You'd go up those stairs and you would be running.
Yeah.
And if you did laundry at night, and you couldn't see out that back window, it was like someone's looking at me. Oh, like God. You just had that awful feeling.
Yeah.
So I would avoid the basement. And then the third floor, I really didn't like. And we weren't supposed to, according to like the insurance policy on the whole situation, we were not supposed to bring people up there to the third floor because it was in bad shape. And there was like lead paint and like it had been the servants' quarters like back in the day.
Yeah.
But it had also, when the house was going through its different like versions of itself.
Yeah.
There's like a full kitchen up there and bedrooms, but it hadn't been kept up or cleaned up the way the other two floors were. And they just didn't want anyone up there.
Right.
Plus there's what's called a widow's walk. I don't know. Do you have those?
A what? A widow's walk?
I have family in Ireland, and sometimes I say things to them and they're like, what the hell are you talking? Yeah. So in New England, a widow's walk is because so many wealthy people who built beautiful antique, like now antique, yeah, weren't antique, yeah, at the time, were like made their money in shipping. They, yeah, would make these like areas that you could climb out the top of the roof in the attic and see the ships coming into port.
Wow.
And the house,
beautiful.
The creepy house in Nantucket had one. And I can remember, yeah, climbing up the ladder and you pop open the roof and you can like look for miles. So this house had one too, because the family that built it made their money making in shipping, like building, yeah, boats. But it was nowhere near the water. It was just kind of, I think, stylistic. So there was a widow's walk. They didn't want anybody climbing up there and going out on the roof.
Yeah. Or
so we weren't allowed to bring anybody up there. And they told me, one of the volunteers had told me, they had at one point had a medium walk through the house, but they hadn't brought the medium up there.
Yeah.
And because they weren't allowed to. And I specifically asked that after I'd been up there. I'm like, because the medium was like, yeah, I don't really think it's haunted. And I was like, did they go on the third floor? And they were like, oh, no, we can't. You know, we can't bring anybody up on the, yeah, third floor. And I was like, oh, okay. And they were like, yeah, they didn't like the basement, but it was like they were more oriented to what was outside and not inside. And I was like, all right, yeah, that sounds right. So in like the late winter, we had a terrible storm and the house is built on the top of a hill. And so the wind, I mean, I can really remember it. I mean, the bricks were like a foot thick. Nothing was, yeah, going to fall over, but it was a powerful storm and snow, you know, for days and everything. So shortly after we dug out of that, the alarm system, the motion sensor part, started to go off at like about 3 o'clock in the morning,
oh,
every night for days.
Wow.
And I was like, it's haunted, because the zone that would, yeah, get tripped was the third floor.
Wow. And no one's up there. So,
and no one's up there. So the first time it happened, the guy that I lived there with, like, we had one of those huge flashlights like the cops have that you could,
yeah,
clobber somebody with, yeah, right next to the door of the bedroom. So he grabbed that and walked through the house. Nobody, you know, they always call, the alarm company calls, the police call. We're like, yep, we're fine. We don't know what it was, whatever. Yeah. That happened once, twice, three times. The fourth time it happened, I was like, I'm done. The police, yeah, need, definitely, to search. Somebody's could be living up there. Like,
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, they could. Yeah, that's a good point.
Laying very still, not tripping the motions. I don't, yeah, know. So the cops came, and it's 3 a.m. again. It was like the same time every night. It totally freaked me out. And the house had, like, we used to come in the side entrance of the house, had this like beautiful grand sort of entrance with a beautiful grand staircase.
Yeah.
And so they came up and I was in my car with the heat on, like, I'm not even going in there, I'm done.
Mm.
And the guy comes up and he rolled down the window, he talks to me. I was like, I don't know what's happening. It happens every night. Oh. And so he goes up to that grand entrance door with his flashlight, and there's a massive raccoon in, right, the front hallway. And that's what I was like, Becca will love this.
Yeah,
we were,
yeah,
all like, exactly, it's, yeah, haunted, we're dying, it's gonna kill us. And it was a huge raccoon. So then the question was, how is the raccoon getting in the house?
Yeah.
So they scare it off. They get it out the front door, shut the door. And over the weekend, again, somebody jogging and hiking in the trails behind the house, knocks on the door, and we answered the door, and they said, there's something out in the woods, and it looks like it's like part of the house. Right. Like, what? And they're like, you should look at it. So we get our friggin' snowshoes on, because it's still this huge snowstorm, like 3 feet of snow.
Yeah.
And go out there with this person, and there is this huge square wooden thing covered in copper laying in the woods.
Yeah.
So we're like, yeah. We called the architect guy, and we were like, Doug, there's this thing out in the woods, and it looks like it's part of the house, like, but what the heck is it? We have no idea. So Doug comes out, and he's like, oh, that's the cap on the widow's walk. That goes on the top of the house. That's how the raccoon got in. And we were like, are you kidding me? So the wind blew this 70-pound thing off and then the raccoon is coming in. So then they're like, yeah, you got to get that back up there.
Yeah.
We were like, we do?
Oh, my God. So, and you had to on your own as well, just the two ears.
Oh, we did.
Oh, wow.
So we go up, we drag the thing up. It weighed a ton.
Yeah.
We go, and we hadn't even gone into that attic area where the roof access was. So we get up there, and it's like dead birds everywhere. I mean, it was like out of a horror movie. I was why do we live in this house? This isn't cool anymore.
I mean, but why? it doesn't sound, yeah. I mean, but why dead birds though? You know, unless it's a known thing that birds just go to old buildings to die, which I don't know.
But it just made it even more like, oh.
Yeah.
So and the ladder that goes up to the access, the opening, which is open now, was like bowing as.
Oh, God.
It was crazy. And we didn't have any rope, but I was like, we are getting this thing on by sundown, because if that alarm goes off at 3 a.m. with the goddamn raccoon again, I'm going to lose it. So we had a long electrical cord, and we wrapped that around. And I'm like pushing it up, and he's pulling it up. And then you have to like try to fit it through, because it's bigger than
the hole. Yeah.
So we get the hole. Well, we took a moment though, because they were like, well, you can see Boston from up there. And so and you could. It was
amazing.
Very nice. We put it in place, and oh my gosh. So that was that. So that solved that problem. And then after all of this, and I'm going to make sure I didn't leave anything out.
Oh, yeah. No, that's fine. That's fine. Are you checking?
I'm just looking at, I made a list.
Check away. Whilst you're doing that, actually, it reminds me. Because you're mentioning, obviously, you're checking, you know, you're working there in like a caretaker facility, but you obviously get to live in a fantastic house at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a similar setup in the Northwest here where I am. And it's called like a guardian property thing. And it's the same sort of thing. If it's a big old building and they don't want kids coming in and stuff, you can sign up to be a guardian of the property and you live there for free. But like you've just said, they'll fit it out with alarms, but you get to be a human within the premises. And there's two things that have sprung up really that have come to mind. One, there's a place over the water from I'm in the city centre of Liverpool now, and just over the River Mersey is a place called Bidston. Mm-hmm. It's like a really ye olde sort of village. It's Bidston Hill. It's like a lot of witchcraft associated with it. And, anyway, in Bidston Hill, on top of Bidston Hill is Bidston Observatory. And it's like a Victorian observatory. So it's not, I don't think it's still in use. So it's very small by modern standards, but there's a big old stately home attached to it that's been there since about maybe the 1700s or something. And that's looked after by guardians. And me and Becca go over in the summer sometime. About 2 years ago, we were going down there and you can see the people's cars parked up who were living there. And they were out doing the garden. And I said to Becca, I'm just going to ask. I'm just going to say, is that haunted? I said, because I bet you it is. And it was this young fella at the gate. And I said, excuse me. I said, are you living here? It's like the guardian thing. He said, yeah, there's a few of us. I said, do you mind if he asks, is it haunted? And he stopped and went, why you ask? And I thought, there we go. That's the answer that you want to hear. So I went, well, I said, I haven't heard nothing. I said, but it clearly looks like it's going to be haunted. And he just went, well, it's a bit weird. And he walked away and like back to the group as it like, but quite sharply, quickly walked away. And I was like this to Becca saying, you know what? He knows something and he just doesn't want to say it, whatever reason. But I'd love to do it. You know, there's loads of, in Liverpool, there's like, there's quite a lot of lovely, like, you know, former old banks that are getting renovated.
Cool. And stuff.
And they're all like, they've all got Guardian Property Service outside. You're just like, God, it would be a ghost hunter's dream to just be in those buildings.
Yeah, it was fun. There was a fella who stopped by. People were, because there's hiking trails and it's mapped hiking and it's a town property. So people were walking by all the time. And an older man came by and I saw him looking out, you know, kind of stepping back and looking at the house. And I came out, I just decided to come. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, hi. How are you? And he was like, oh, I used to live here. And so he had lived in the house when it was veterans housing.
Oh, okay.
Right after the war. And I said, you know, he's describing the room that they lived in, which wasn't one of our rooms that we lived in. It was one of the empty rooms. And, you know, he told me stories. And I said, but, you know, would you like to see the room? You know, it's all, you know, it's empty, it's dusty, it's this and that. But if you'd like to come in. And he said, I would. So he came in and walked up and he had a look around and he was telling me, you know, we had our first baby here and there used to be a porch off the back, which actually they've restored the porch, but it wasn't restored at the time. He said, I have nice memories of like, you know, rocking the baby on the back porch and blah, blah, blah. And I said, do you have any ghost stories? And, you know, typical like old man veteran, he just went, And he said, don't know how you live here.
Really?
But I didn't live in that room. I mean, the rooms mattered. There were rooms that bothered me and others that didn't. And the ones that, I mean, I walking around the empty part of the house, I wasn't thrilled. There was a maid's quarters off of the, there were like four main bedrooms for the family. I think the room that became like the room that I lived in, like my bedroom, was actually where a bunch of servants maybe lived, or I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe they had taken down walls or I have no idea, but they said with the description of the house is that it's a four bedroom house.
Yeah.
Inverted
commas.
Right. I mean, it was, yes, there are four formal bedrooms, but there are many other rooms. You know, there's a whole third floor of like five or six and that aren't in that count.
Yeah.
And the back room was the father's because he was actually disabled, so there had been an elevator in the house, like an old which they had blocked all that off. It looked like a closet and you couldn't open the door, and they told us that's why, like, if you try to open this door there is an elevator shaft
and it's Christ. Like that sounds
huge. It will go down, so we never tried to pry that open. But so his room was right next to that, and the wife's room was in the front, the lady's room, and she had built, if you look at the front of the house, there's like a porte cochere in the front where like you would drive up.
Lovely.
And above it was a room that didn't quite look right because architecturally it doesn't like kind of line up. It's like almost a windowless weird room. Like it doesn't kind of look right. So that was actually, it was added after.
Okay.
It wasn't in the original architectural plans. And when you know that, you're like, oh yeah, that doesn't look right.
Yeah.
But when you would go into that room, like that woman, whoever lived there, whoever she was all I can tell you, not a happy person, like did not like being there, but the the lady of the house wanted her right there in that room off of her room, which means that she couldn't have like gone to the lady's room without walking through her mistress's room. Yeah, it was almost like crap. I did not like being in there. There were certain rooms I didn't like, but the ones that we were asked to live in besides the basement, I was fine.
Yeah.
So at the end of it, they started talking about sort of longer term plans for the house. And they said, after all the stuff with the raccoon and the dead birds and us being up there in the third floor, which we didn't often or ever go up.
Yeah.
They said, well, our long-term plan is to renovate the third floor for that to be where the caretakers live.
Wow.
And I was like, nope.
That's going to be in a tent.
I'm all set.
Yeah.
So the person I was living with got a job in Washington, D.C., and he was like, I want to do it. And I was like, I will go with you. And they couldn't believe it that we wanted to leave after all that. I mean, and there were many more crazy things that happened with, like, the whole place was rigged with, like, old school sprinkler systems because it had been, like, you know, old people's housing, veterans, like, they had to have all of those things. And those would start going.
Wow.
And just like rain down, and the fire department would get the call that something was happening, and they wouldn't respond because they almost like didn't believe it.
Like, wow.
All in the they had an old fashioned like hammer bell thing that would be like ding 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 ding, and then the basically disabled but still sort of functional water sprinklers would be like trickling this water, and no one would come. We'd call. And they'd be like, oh, we'll get to it.
Oh, my God. It sounds like, you know what? You've described it so wonderfully that, like, it is, you know, everything about it, like the churchyard on the side, people knocking and saying there's something in the woods. It's just picturesque and amazing and terrifying. What would you say? Did much else happen before you managed to leave there and go?
No, we wrapped it up. I actually stayed there. He went to DC.
Yeah.
And I had to finish my school year. So I was there alone.
You nutter. Really? You absolute nutter. That's insane. No way.
For maybe 4 or 5 weeks. And I stayed over at friends a lot. I just left food for the cats. And,
oh my God.
But they had, I'll tell you what, they did have they had a carriage house. And in the carriage house was falling apart. It was dangerous to even walk in it. But if you went in it, which I did a couple of times, they had all kinds of stuff that people had kind of dumped there. They had a real British phone booth. What? And I tried to take it with me because I was like, oh, this is cool. Weighed, you know how much.
Well, yeah.
Like, it was like there was nothing moving that thing. I bet it's still there. Like, there was all, they had arcade games in there and motorcycles people had dumped in the pond. But just a funny, like, you know, the community collection of fingerprints on that place from people leaving stuff there or living there, or like, who knows who's haunting it? Like, I think the family spent like 2 months a year there. It can't be that. Like, they can't.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
It's an interesting thing because where I'm from, I mean, I'm obviously from Liverpool, but I'm from a little area of Liverpool called Highton originally before I moved into the city centre with Becca. And I've lived there all my life originally, but it's known as some areas are quite run down, some areas are all right, but one of the main streets or one of within the village center, all of the houses on this street are shipping merchants' mansions. Because that's like apparently because of obviously the dock in Liverpool, they didn't want to live in the city center, so they went out to the suburbs to build these mansions. And next time I'm down, I'm going to have a look to see if there's any of these widow's walks, because arguably at that time you might have been able to see into the city because some of them are on hills and you can see into the town center.
Sometimes they have a little terrace up there, like a little, like it'll be marked on the roof, like some little fence around an area.
Yeah.
And here they, like the ones, I've never been up in one that you actually had like a patio. Sometimes they're fancy and you can actually like climb upstairs and sit there. The ones I've seen, three houses around here I've seen, including the two I've told you about. Yeah. It's always, it was a ladder and a hatch, and you just kind of look. But there are fancier ones, but they often, even if it's just a hatch, they'll mark it with like a little kind of like fencing terrace type, just decoration around where that is, because that shows to people on the outside that you have it.
I see.
Because it means that you're
signifier of wealth.
That's who you are, right?
Amazing.
Yeah, check it out. Let me know.
I will. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation. I feel like I could talk to you for another 2 or 3 hours just about history and architecture. But it's been fantastic to talk to you, Mary. It really has. And if you manage to, you know, if you get any more stories or you hear any more things or you experience any more of that strange game you play with your husband about, I'll tell you who's died there, Jeffrey.
Yeah.
I'm not saying his name's Jeffrey, but, you know. then do let us know and we'll get you back on, because it's been absolutely lovely to talk to you.
I'd love it.
And thank you very much for coming on and talking to me about ghosts.
Thanks so much, Kevin.
You're very welcome. Is there anyone you want to say hello to or anything you want to plug if you do anything like that? Or
nothing to plug. Okay. Just hi to my son, Patrick. He loves these ghost stories and I always make him listen.
Oh, hello, Patrick. That was my granddad's name, actually. He was an Irishman.
Oh, very nice.
There you go. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mary. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Good night, Kevin.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
So there we have it. That was Mary's call. How fantastic was that? Don't forget, if you want to come on the show, get in touch. You can either send me your story written or you can say, I want to come on the show and talk to you, just like Mary did. Then email contact@talkaboutghosts.com. Well, that wraps up another Sunday sermon. I hope you all seriously enjoyed it. I know I did. Don't forget, if you want more, then today's Patreon episode will be me discussing, what did I say it was? Oh, the Battersea Poltergeist. Yes, a very famous and long-standing poltergeist case from the UK. And also, is the White House haunted? Well, thanks to long-time contributor Lucy White, we're going to find out. Yes, we are. So, if you want to do that, go over to patreon.com/we-need-to-talk-about-ghosts. And I think that's everything for this week, guys. So, until next week, stay safe. Look after yourselves and each other. Copyright Jeremy Springer, mid-90s stylee. Okay, you wonderful people. Daddy bye.